This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, which for me is a much anticipated event because it's my favorite time of the week. It's an opportunity to riff with our nutritionist in residence in response to your questions. And your questions come to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. radioprogram@AOL.com, and we got quite a few questions in the mailbag.
We do.
Which we'll get to momentarily, but First a little bit of a recap of some of the news. I came across this. This is interesting. You know these nitric oxide supplements?
Yeah.
You know, just say no.
Ah, NO, you know, right.
NO, nitric oxide.
Uh-huh.
You know, for circulatory and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, and the thought is that concentrates of beet may increase the level of dietary nitrates, which can then be converted into nitric oxide in the system, and thereby, you know, conferring certain health and circulatory benefits.
Yes.
I was amazed and excited to see the announcement of a clinical trial on nitric oxide for patients with COVID-19, the idea is to be administered at the earliest onset of symptoms to prevent the rapid progression of the virus, improve recovery and survival of a specific subgroup, African Americans.
Huh.
And the thought is that, you know, there's something about the experience with African Americans where we see greater morbidity and mortality.
Yeah.
More hospitalization, more ventilators, more death. And so this is a, they got permission from the FDA to begin a phase 2/3 outpatient clinical study of the efficacy of, it's actually a drug. It's not, it is actually sodium nitrite. Now, does that sound familiar, sodium nitrite?
Yeah, this is stuff in the salami.
Exactly. It's used as a preservative.
Yes.
And we were taught, like, you got to avoid sodium nitrite, but there's actually some...
Well, or you could eat salami and die of botulism if it if there isn't any nitrite.
Yes,
or
right.
An alternative, which would be a nitrate-free or with celery juice.
And, it also provides a nice color, like a red color, because it's sort of... It oxygenates the meat, or, you know, in some way it imparts
it
a color.
It does something to the iron.
So, anyway, the... Another way of doing that is to include beet extract. So if you get, you know, high enough beet extract, you'll get the equivalent of chemical sodium nitrite. Anyway, this is using the nitric oxide principle. I thought that was kind of interesting. And there's a guy that I've interviewed on my program who is behind this innovation. There's a company called Nitric Oxide Innovations, NOI on the stock exchange. Call your broker. It may be the next big thing. You know, it's like, but it's interesting, I mean, in terms of natural, I mean, it's not really natural because this is actually the chemical version of what, and the reason I think that they did that is so that they could get the clinical trial, because clinical trial on beet extract, it's going to be, you know, a little sample and flaky. This is actually...
This is so interesting because I just had beets last night.
And?
It was from my garden.
Oh, just from your garden.
Just delicious.
So you should be all set.
Yeah, I'm all set.
Or you don't need to wear a mask. You could just go.
I'm all done. I got more beets waiting for me at home.
Partay tonight, you know, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting. And, you know, other stories in the mailbox. Mm-hmm. We've got, let's see. There's a lot on exercise this week. How exercise stalls cancer growth through the immune system. Mm. And, you know, we know, you know, people are walking for the cure and running for the cure.
Yeah.
And there's something to it, especially with these hormonally mediated cancers, prostate cancer and breast cancer, a significant effect of exercise in forestalling the progression of those cancers. You know, maybe other cancers are less amenable to that effect.
Well, exercise also makes our cells more sensitive to insulin.
Right.
And insulin and cancer are very intimately associated.
Insulin resistance, yeah.
Exercise is often like taking, almost like taking prescription metformin. Mm-hmm. That's how valuable it is, mm-hmm. exercise. It's part of the equation. It's not just about healthy eating.
And another story along these lines, hard physical work may significantly increase the risk of dementia. So it's kind of a two-edged sword, you know.
Hard physical work?
Hard physical work.
It should decrease dementia. You would think it would raise BDNF if it's aerobic.
Hard physical work. Now, I don't know if they've factored in the potential for environmental exposures, because a lot of people doing hard physical work like construction and, you know, welding and things, they may be exposed to lots of chemicals. So,
exactly.
But that brings up, you know, what is called the Goldilocks effect in exercise, which I did a little research on that this week, because there's a guy named James O'Keefe. Now, you know that name because James O'Keefe is the guy who, like, pranks the people and does those.
What is he called?
It's the Veracity Squad.
It's the...
Anyway, but this is not the same guy.
Project Veritas.
Project Veritas. Yeah. This different guy.
Veracity Squad.
He's an MD, James O'Keefe.
Yeah.
And he's like one of the world's, he's a wonderful cardiologist, but he thinks out of the box. And he has a whole set of papers that he's written on exercise and the benefits of exercise, and truly are the benefits, but also excess exercise. Mm. Now, the vast majority of us are not in danger of doing excess exercise.
Right.
But there are people who are ultra marathoners.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who they want to do Ironman triathlons at 75.
They cycle 200 miles a week.
Right, or something like that. Yeah. And that may be an underestimate, actually, you know, for some of these people. Because
that's true.
Each leg of the Tour de France was maybe 120 miles.
Oh,
so they were doing it for, you know, 20 consecutive days, with a couple rest days thrown in, going up mountains.
Okay.
So, but the point being is that they discovered that, lo and behold, the people at the very, very highest end of exercise, and I don't consider myself among them, although I exercise, you know, I exercise frequently, but they have a higher risk of coronary artery calcification, and they have a higher risk of something called cardiac muscle fibrosis, which almost looks a little bit like they've had small heart attacks.
Oh, my. As opposed to an enlarged heart.
That will be a consequence of that sometimes.
Yeah.
I actually treated, and I won't mention his name because he's quite famous, one of the world's foremost endurance athletes.
Yes.
Who also happened to be a vegan. Mm. And when he came to see me, he was in his 60s, and he was really... running on fumes. I mean, he was so depleted and so...
He had to have deficiencies.
Yeah.
Well, being vegan and so athletic.
He had deficiencies, but I think that his body got so many free radicals from this very intensive exercise that it may have hastened his organ aging.
Mm.
You know, he looked sort of shrunken and emaciated and catabolic.
Yeah.
You know, there was a catabolic effect of exercise.
And his body was eating his own protein to make up for that exercise.
Possibly, yeah.
Right?
But, I mean, this is a guy who would routinely, you know, like 50 miles like nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, he was one of the founders of the ultramarathon movement. You know, so marathon's not enough. 26 miles, that's just that's for wusses.
Yeah.
So there is some talk about the, what's called the J-shaped curve, which means... if you look at a J, but actually reverse it, you know, so that the high end of the J
yes.
is on the left, mm-hmm. and the little
by up, the y
upswing
axis.
Is on the yeah. the right. So mm-hmm. flip it around,
right,
and then you'll see that at the no exercise, high mortality.
Yes,
the more exercise you do, the better. Till you get to the bottom, which is like
the
very
sweet
low mortality,
spot.
The sweet spot, the so-called Goldilocks yeah. effect: not yeah. too hot, not too cold. And then there's an uptick as you increase the intensity of exercise just a little bit. It doesn't mm-hmm. go up as high as for a couch potato.
Yeah.
But it starts to go up a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm taking it to heart a little bit. I mean, my zeal could maybe propel me to reach for, but, you know, between my athletic ability and the potential for injuries, I'm in not a lot of danger mm-hmm. of doing this. You know, I actually yeah. discussed this with, I had lunch with a couple yesterday. And the guy is 65, and he runs 3 miles 5 times a week. And
right.
I said, don't worry about that. I said, that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you were to decide that you wanted to do, 75 or 100 miles a week.
Yeah.
You know, that could be, especially at your age, that could actually be putting you into the injury zone.
Sure.
But
sure.
usually what stops people is the, musculoskeletal injuries that are
yeah.
kind of like your body's warning that you're in, you know, mm-hmm. doing too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of people just push through that pain too. They shouldn't.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
you know, no
the
pain,
phrase,
no gain.
No pain, no, pain,
yeah.
no gain is, no, don't follow that.
Yeah. So anyway, I thought that it was
yeah.
kind of interesting. I mean,
that is interesting.
The sort of the two-edged sword effects of exercise. Now, mm-hmm. those of you who are couch potatoes, please take no solace from what I'm saying, because that's not good.
Right.
So what we're talking about is kind of a nuanced approach to exercise, where at the very, very highest end, maybe that could be a problem.
So these fibrotic tears in the heart?
They're not fibrotic tears. They're
not,
probably healed injuries of the heart that may have come from tiny infarcts.
Wow.
Like maybe little heart attacks.
Little heart attacks.
Yeah, because when the demand exceeds the capacity to deliver blood and oxygen, there may be some small ischemic events that occur.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, I think I've experienced that sensation of like, man, I got to slow down because
yeah.
I'm like, you know, a fish out of water. I feel,
right.
You know, my heart is going too fast,
yeah.
can't keep up with the demand.
Mm-hmm.
So
I catch my breath.
Yeah, catch your breath.
Yeah.
But for a lot of athletes who override that sensation and push through that, that could be problematic.
Yeah.
And they do have a higher incidence of atrial fibrillation, the big-time athletes.
Yeah.
They have big hearts.
Well, they could get an exercise-induced tachycardia, possibly.
Well, tachycardia is an appropriate response to exercise, but I guess you may...
True, but one that's not coming down.
Right. It just doesn't... And that happens.
Yeah.
That happens.
Okay. Wow.
So... Yeah.
That could be a little scary, too. All right. Well, that's interesting. So, not too little and not too much. You want the Goldilocks effect.
Those are some of the things that have crossed my page this week. What's in your mailbox, Layla?
In my mail, let's see. We've got an email here from Caroline. Thank you for the conversation last podcast about coconut yogurt. I can't find one that's low enough in carbs. Well, Caroline, neither can we, because it needs some amount of sugar for any probiotics to feed on.
Or even just a carb.
Even just a carb, exactly. So you may have to
make
your
own. It may not have sugar added, but it may have some carbohydrate.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know.
You know, you could make your own at home with some coconut cream and stevia. I glanced at a recipe. I didn't do this myself. Don't take my word for it, but...
Will it grow?
Yeah.
Will it grow?
Or the point is, maybe there's no probiotics. It's just coconut yogurt to eat and enjoy.
Well,
so
in other
that
words, that would
something.
Be like coconut cream from the
coconut
can.
Coconut cream, yeah.
But it won't be yogurt. And
right.
It won't have live cultures.
No.
So in order for the... So that's kind of like... It's a contradiction in terms because...
It's like an imposter yogurt.
Right.
A yogurt imposter.
Because coconut cream has virtually no carbs in it.
Yeah, because it's mostly fat. It's almost like taking heavy cream.
Right.
And whipping it up and there's virtually no carbohydrate at all. Well, Caroline has another dilemma. She is a longtime vegan who she says is pretty bored with my vegan options, especially since trying to control my A1C, which is close to a 6.
Oh, no.
And never lowers despite my attempts to lower my carbs. in an already low-carb diet. It's hard to be vegan and low-carb, right? Well, here she goes on to say, that leaves us with berries and veggies. Boring. Caroline, not just boring, but dangerous. You can't just eat like a rabbit. Mm-hmm. You need some protein sources. There is not enough there.
Well, weren't we descended from rabbits?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but we don't make our own vitamin C like they do. Anyway, so, and we can't wiggle our noses like they do. Anyway, so there are a lot of vegan cookbooks out there, but I find most recipes include high-carb ingredients. Of course, you have to rely on some amount of grains, and even a half cup mm-hmm. of any cooked grain is going to have at mm-hmm. least 30 grams of carbohydrate.
And the beans have carbs.
Sure, the beans have carbs, although a lot of fiber to offset it.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
Let's admit of the possibility that there's something going on with her that makes her more intolerant to carbs or makes her more prone to abnormal blood sugar.
Yeah.
And it is possible that as people age, that their pancreatic function declines.
Yes.
And or they have a gene which there's a multiplicity of genes that, affect sugar metabolism.
Yes.
And that she has that going on. So she may actually have, I mean, if I were to evaluate her, I'd keep an open mind. You know, maybe she doesn't have insulin resistance. Maybe she has an inadequate production of insulin, which is a different matter. Usually people with insulin resistance have too much insulin.
Right.
And she may be the kind of person who doesn't respond that well to a low-carb diet, that she actually has a broken glucose thermostat in her body.
That could be.
And it's not about, it's not entirely about diet. I mean, it's worth, look, in, you know, I say for the sake of health, in my opinion, it's worth experimenting with your diet and perhaps sacrificing your ideals about eating animal protein. But I'm a pragmatist and other people are idealists and they believe that killing animals or harming, living creatures is bad, you know, and that's their credo. But I would say that, most important in life is to sustain your human life so that you can make
You have to choose between your ideals and your health.
And your well-being sometimes.
And your well-being, absolutely. So Caroline, it could be that maybe you're not low enough in carbs. It could be that the A1C isn't budging from a 6 because of how long you've been vegan. Maybe you need to step up your exercise to help lower that as well. So, okay. But yeah, it's in my experience.
So I would say
tough being vegan and
It's worth a try to go on a low carb diet with animal protein.
Sure.
However, it may or may not be the answer to this situation.
That's true. I mean, low carb vegan, non starchy vegetables.
This kind of person would be fun to evaluate.
Yeah. Non starchy vegetables, fruits, lots of avocado, maybe lots of nuts. And that's about it. And not too much fruit, and really low on grains. But that's
how's tofu in terms of carb content?
It would be pretty low.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be pretty low. Tofu, tempeh, hemp might be another. Hemp is a complete protein, which might be something.
And what do you do with the hemp?
I don't know.
It's like a hemp powder kind of thing.
Yeah, hemp powder.
You make a shake.
You can make a shake exactly.
How does it taste on its own?
It depends on your formulation.
Usually people want to throw some fruit in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
A banana or something.
Banana, maybe some green tea.
Yeah.
Maybe a pinch of stevia.
Right.
Or something like that.
Cocoa powder or something.
Cocoa powder.
Yeah, for flavor.
Yeah.
Vanilla, which is, it's got a flavor, but doesn't have carbs in it.
Right. So, Caroline, best of luck with that. If you want to remain vegan, just start counting your carbohydrates.
She hasn't talked about her activity level either, and she may be very inactive, in which case activity could
you
help.
Step that up, and that could help bring down A1C.
Yeah, it could.
I want to say almost in a pinch, but we should have to see. Oh, here's a good one. This is from Larry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, recently a neighbor of mine was over to help with some housework. When she opened my cabinets and saw my huge supplement collection, being a nurse, she thinks she knows everything, she yelled at me for taking so many supplements. That is no good for your liver. Give yourself a break and stop taking them for a while. You'll have expensive urine and you waste too much money. Dr. Hoffman, I'll play your response to her. Please help me defend my position.
What? Don't bother. Don't bother to play that for this. This person is a person who's set in her ways. And,
yeah.
You know, I know the type.
Yeah.
And so, but for your benefit, you know, I will say this.
Uh-huh.
Is, you know, my favorite counter to the argument of you're making expensive urine is that's a good reason not to drink water because you pee it out anyway. So
right.
Why bother to drink?
Exactly. Especially, you know, if you're buying water.
Yeah. Who needs to, I mean, save money. Don't drink.
Yeah. Don't drink.
Right.
Yeah. Breatharian? What was
right.
that?
No, it's a heliotrope, you know, get your energy from the sun or something, you know, right?
Yeah.
Like photosynthesize.
No.
Yeah.
No,
even
no.
plants it's... need, even plants need water.
Right, absolutely.
And so, okay, so obviously that is a spurious argument. But, you know, as to liver, I would say to this nurse, and, you know, I could see myself having a little face-off, you know, in the hospital cafeteria with her or something,
uh-huh.
You know, as I've had with people from time to time. And I'd say, look, you know, I from the standpoint of my specialty, I outrank you. I got to say, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I hate to pull rank.
No, it's true.
But it you know, this is my...
You're nutritionally oriented.
Not,
yeah.
And nutritionally trained. And
yeah.
I've passed competency in nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, you know, nearly 40 years of practice in the field of nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last thing I want to do is inflict hepatic toxicity on my patients.
Absolutely.
And I know that there are some things that cause hepatic toxicity.
Sure.
Some things, it's a question of how much. You know, like
yeah.
a small amount of vitamin A is okay, but massive amounts of vitamin A will cause hepatotoxicity.
Sure.
So we got to be careful. Same thing with something like niacin, vitamin
yes.
B3.
Yep.
So we know when, you know, when to avoid. But, you know, just the mere idea that a lot of supplements will negatively affect your liver, it's never been borne out.
No.
And in our practice, we monitor liver function. We, you know, what's
Absolutely.
Going
on. Absolutely, yeah.
And liver function gets better with the vast majority
it
of patients
does.
We treat. Because
especially with things like phosphatidylcholine and alpha-lipoic acid
for
and
liver
milk
problems.
Thistle
right.
and all kinds of things
yeah.
to help the liver.
Yeah.
Dandelion.
So, you know, so look, listen, do me a favor. Do not play that for this person.
Yeah.
Because this person's going to always want to have the last word.
Right.
And
Larry, don't invite her over to help with your housework anymore.
Because
Hire somebody.
The price is too high.
Larry does say...
The psychic cost is too high.
Yeah. Larry does say, with all I've learned from the show over the years, I'm not sure I'd still be around or at least have had a major incident without my knowledge of prevention. Thank you for all that you do. The show literally helps me stay alive.
Well, Larry. That's great to hear.
Larry.
Okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So, and, you know, he hasn't needed a liver transplant. And it's
no,
all good. It's
no,
all good.
That's
so
a good
so
thing.
Good.
Oh, here's an interesting one. And this is from Stephen. I recently developed geographic tongue. I didn't know you could develop that. I thought you're kind of born with that. All right. Certain foods irritate it, so I simply avoid those foods. I miss those foods, and I hope to be able to eat them again. From my research, there seems to be no known cause or treatment,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not clear on whether it may resolve on its own, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I would just, you know, it's bothersome if it's irritating.
Yeah.
I would definitely see an oral surgeon, not just a dentist, but there
yeah.
are people who specialize in non-tooth problems in the mouth.
Yeah.
Because people can develop, you know, oral cancers or precancers or conditions like leukoplakia, you know, which is considered possibly a precancerous condition. And it's a painful condition. So just get checked out for that. Is there, are there nutritional deficiencies associated with tongue abnormalities? Usually deficiencies of B vitamins, riboflavin,
yes.
and things like that can cause you
yeah.
an exceedingly red tongue.
Yeah.
You know,
a pink, beefy tongue might be
yeah,
indicative
but,
of that.
But you know,
migrating geographic, wouldn't that also be related
allergies,
to allergy?
Allergies, possibly some intolerance.
Okay.
I would also check for the possibility of digestive problems because the tongue is sometimes it's the externally presenting part of the GI tract.
Yeah.
That is visible and might suggest trouble further down.
Traditional Chinese medicine is always looking at the tongue, right?
Yes, and they, you know, mm-hmm. they come up with, you know, sophisticated diagnoses based on the color and the texture of the tongue, and the, you know,
yeah.
but yeah, I don't. There's no single thing that it's caused by.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's also, I mean, even fungal infections of the mouth can sometimes cause the tongue to be irritated and have that appearance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, oral thrush or yeast infection in the mouth, you know, these are possibilities.
So get that checked out, Stephen.
Yeah, do.
And thank you for that question.
All right. Our time for part one has come to an end.
Wow.
But let's get a preview of what we're going to tackle in part two.
Oh. I know you say that saturated fat is not an issue. Can you please tell me if you change your advice regarding saturated fat if one had coronary artery plaque?
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's a great question.
It is.
That we'll lead off part two with. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin. It is our weekly Q&A with Layla, and you can get your questions to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. Some people have figured that out, apparently.
Yeah.
We're getting questions. That's good. That's good. Because we repeated enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, part two.